And we mean action now.
Hi there, dear listeners of Radio Havana, Cuba. Today, we're connecting the dots between the roots of Western colonial rule over the Arabs and early Islamic extremism. Part 1. The Turkish Ottoman Empire had been existing for centuries, ruling different cultures, ethnic and religious peoples, and was relatively successful. They allowed the subjected people to retain their language, religion, and culture, but always made it a point to have on their side the religious elite. In 1881, British and French creditor banks convinced the Sultan Abdulhamid II, head of the Ottoman Empire, into accepting a creation of foreign bankers' control over the national debt through the public debt administration. But the European banks practically ended up controlling the Ottoman state revenues. It had a board representing European and Turkish bondholders. This bondage of debt was so great that it drained the Turkish finances, weakening Istanbul's ability to control the far-flung empire. The British aim was to weaken economically the Ottoman Empire, taking advantage of the financial troubles of the Ottoman Empire. Great Britain took Kuwait as a British protectorate. Eventually, the Ottoman Empire lost the Caucasus, Crimea, the Balkans, and Mediterranean islands, and also lost the tax revenues of those territories. What remained was Turkey, the Middle East, and Arabian lands. Then the Ottoman Empire became more oppressive and less tolerant with its subjects under growing financial pressure. Arab nationalists rebelled against the Sultan's rule from Istanbul. One was Hussein and his Hashemite tribesmen, and Bedouins who revolted with British help because he was promised an Arab caliphate if he joined the British against the Germans. A rival Arab revolt was led by Ibn Saud's nomadic Bedouin tribes and promised by the British that he would become head of the Saudis if he rose against the Ottoman Empire and Germans also. The Arab revolts were aided by British agents. One was St. John Philby, and the other was T.E. Lawrence, known as Lawrence of Arabia, glorified in the movies. As usual, the version is simplified and doesn't tell the true story. Lawrence of Arabia knew that the Arab lands the Arabs were fighting for would not be theirs, but instead were being offered to other powers secretly. That was the secret double-crossing Sykes-Picot Agreement of 1916. For instance, Tsarist Russia would take northern Turkey and Persia, France would take Syria and Lebanon, Iraq and Kuwait would be British, including oil concessions from the Turkish Petroleum Company, which became the Iraq Petroleum Company controlled by Great Britain. So, the Europeans ended up covering up the Arab, Muslim, Middle East, and betraying the Arabs, who were subsequently colonized. The Bolshevik Revolution, the following year, 1917, discovered the Sykes-Picot Act and exposed the British and French perfidy. This originated mistrust and grudge of the Arab world towards the West. Then came the Balfour Declaration. British Foreign Secretary Balfour wrote to the powerful banker Lord Rothschild that Palestine, which was open to British military occupation, should be the home of the Jewish people. The note was to be given to the Zionist Federation. A Jewish historian, Arthur Koestler, ironically observed that, quote, one nation solemnly promised to a second nation the country of a third. More than that, the country was still part of the empire of a fourth, namely Turkey, unquote. With Palestine becoming a British mandate, the Jews began settling in the area of Palestine in the 1920s. Ibn Saud of the new Saudi Arabia, which became a new separate kingdom, saw this as a theft of Muslim homelands. this became another source of Muslim grudge against the Western powers. The Palestine issue became very important as Jews kept emigrating to the Palestine territories without heeding the immigration limits set up by the British. They emigrated to the Palestine region with the idea that they had the biblical Israel right to the whole Palestine territory. By 1947, the Jews became 33% of the population and occupied 6% of the territory then. That's another connecting issue to deal with. But going back to August 1920, in the Treaty of Sèvres, France, the defeated Ottoman Empire, which had sided with the Germans, was finally carved up by the Western powers, abiding by the Sykes-Picot Agreement 4 years back. The treaty didn't address the Kurds, forming an independent Kurdistan, so the Kurds were left spread over Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and Syria. That was a source of eternal ethnic and national tension, which is a good thing for the divide and rule tactics of the occupying British and French empires. Britain not only got the oil fields of the newly formed Iraq, but also the oil fields of Western Iran, annexed Kuwait, and annexed Egypt as a protectorate controlling the Suez Canal and Sudan.
Now is the moment. Now is the moment. Come on.
Connecting the dots, where did the Islamic extremism come from? To start with, Ibn Saud, the Arab leader who had been given the region of Saudi Arabia through British backing, allied with Islamic Bedouin tribes, who followed strict interpretations of the Quranic law, the Sharia, dating back to the 1700s. The founder of the extreme interpretations was Mohammed bin Abd al-Wahhab. The Wahhabism extended to the Shiite regions of Oman, into Qatar, Kuwait, and Bahrain, later to Syria, Iraq, and opposed the Ottoman Turkish Empire. They wanted the purification and unification of all Islam under the Sharia law. Sharif Hussein, who was the other leader of the Arab revolt, backed by the British against the Ottoman Empire, was at the same time rival of Ibn Saud and lost control of Mecca and Medina. However, they also adopted extreme interpretations of Quran law, and Sharif Hussein's sons, Abdallah and Faisal, Hashemite princes, became the puppet rulers over Jordan and Iraq, backed by Britain. The Hashemites claimed lineage directly to the founder of Islam, Muhammad. In reality, the ultra-conservative Wahhabi Islamic sect represented a minority of the Saudi population. They represented at 20% of the population. Now listen to this. The British secret intelligence services became fascinated with the ideology of the most backward and extremist interpretations of the Quran, of the Islamic religion. Through these religious extremisms, they could back Arab political leaders as holders of these extreme laws, which would counteract any democratic popular movements against them. They became part of the ruling elites, who saw it very convenient to be pro-British, to be pro-West at that time. After World War I, the British and French empires defeated Germany and got hold of the Arab lands of the Turkish Ottoman Empire that had been an ally of Germany. The best way of controlling these vast Arab lands was through Arab dictators, Arab despots, who used the extremist form of religion to maintain a solid grip on the Arab societies they ruled over. Of course, these Arab despots, with their elite followers, were a small minority dependent on the more important imperial Western powers. For instance, the French Empire used the Christian Maronites, who were a minority, to rule over the Levant region. That became another historic source of irritation and grudge against the West by the Arab world. Connecting the dots, This is your host, Mike Hudson.
And we may